Parsha Shoftim. This week's Parsha in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud, we come across the famous Pasuk when the Torah writes, Lo Sosur Min HaDovor Asher Yagidu Lecha Yemin Usmoil. We find the instruction, Pasuk Yud and Pasuk Yud Aleph, to obey the words of Chazal. So much so, the opinion of the Rambam, interestingly, is that to obey Chazal is in fact a mitzvah min ha-Torah, which triggers the obvious question, so why do we ever differentiate between mitzvahs drabonon and mitzvahs min ha-Torah? It's all the same thing. If the Torah tells you you have to listen to the rabonon, well, why would there be a different set of rules for one as opposed to the other? That's not our discussion. What I'd like to just perhaps talk about for a moment or two is that we know that the Chazal HaKadoshim in many, many, many places instituted takonis, whether it was a mitzvah or to the contrary an aveira, don't do the following because you might end up being over the aveira, as we find in the very first Mishnah in Shas. We open Shas, what is the opening Mishnah? Brochas, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, and it says there that even though essentially you could read Kriya Shema Balaila all night long, and yet Chazal said no, don't read it later than Chatzos. Why? Kedei laharachik es ha'odom min ha'aveira. That is the mandate of Chazal, in order to be marachik es ha'odom min ha'aveira. Therefore they instituted, as we know, hundreds and thousands of various takonos to avoid ending up being over an aveira. So there is a very interesting discussion, and it's even fair to call it a controversial discussion, and that is, what happens when Chazal instituted a decree, either a positive or a negative decree, for reasons which they explain, and the reasons no longer seem relevant? Well, does that therefore mean that the takona disappears together with the reason that has also disappeared? Or do we say, no, once they instituted it, that's the way it remains forevermore? A classic example is as follows. We know, and this comes from Chazal, the Mishnayos talk about it already, that if you have, for example, a cup of water which is left overnight, uncovered, then it should not be drunk the next morning. Why not? Because of fears of sakana. Because maybe a nochosh, a snake, took a sip out of the water, left some poison in it, and if you drink it, it's therefore sakana. So Chazal said there is an issa called gilui. Gilui means gilui mashkin, liquids or drinks that have been left uncovered overnight. Now, Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, and in other places, points out that we don't really have snakes. Difficult to say this in front of a snake catcher, but it's difficult. Perhaps we don't have snakes. They're not motzui. And if snakes are no longer motzui, at least not to the degree that they used to be, well, it hardly seems any point in having this issa not to drink the water because maybe a snake took a bite out of it. There's no snakes. That becomes a question, and indeed Tosfos says, therefore ain lochosh. There's absolutely no reason to be concerned with this anymore. Tosfos writes this in a number of places. So you look in the Shulchan Aruch.
Yes,
but the truth is, the Poskim do point out that even though Tosfos says there are no longer snakes, Motziv in Eretz Yisrael could be different.
Oh, definitely.
So don't worry, you're still in a job. That's all the Poskim write. In Eretz Yisrael, it could be there are snakes, as we'll mention in a moment. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. Mashkim Shemizgalu. This is Yeridea Kutte Zayin Tifal. Excuse me. It says Mashkim Shemizgalu. The drinks were, liquids were left open overnight. The Shulchan Aruch says the Chachamim prohibited drinking from them. Why? Because we're concerned maybe a snake took a sip and left poison in it. Says the Shulchan Aruch in conclusion, V'achshav she'ein nechashim mitzuyim beinenu. Nowadays, the snakes are no longer prevalent in our areas. Muta, this halacha no longer exists.
And he lived in
Eretz Yisrael, at least at the end of his life, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. So the Shulchan Aruch quite clearly does not differentiate between Eretz Yisrael and other areas, and this would almost seem a rather controversial point. The Chazal instituted the decree, but they gave a reason. Well, if the reason doesn't apply, then the decree disappears. But the Shulchan Aruch is saying so categorically. So halacha l'maisa, if you leave a drink, a cup of water uncovered overnight, and you come to your Rav and you say, can I drink it the next morning? The Rav will have to answer, Shulchan Aruch says 100% mutter. Shulchan Aruch says 100% mutter. However, the Shlah, the Pitzchei Tshuva over there brings in the name of the Shlah, the Shlah Kodosh says it's still best to avoid it. He can't say it's offer, so Shulchan Aruch says it's mutter. He brings in the name of the Vilna Goyen, and the Vilna Goyen was very, very concerned with this issue. And he said, one should be concerned with this issue. And if you want to know all the halachas, well, you could hardly look in Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch says it's mutter, so you're not going to find any details there. So he says, look in the Torah, look in other sources, I would advise you to be concerned with this, look further details in the Torah. So the question is, why was the Vilna Goyen concerned with this if the Shulchan Aruch seems to be saying something which is very logical? They gave a reason, the reason doesn't apply, so what's the point of keeping the decree in place? The answer is, and this is a very, very important principle, one of the Talmidim of the Vilna Goyen, who wrote a famous sefer called Pa'at HaShulchan, he writes there that the Vilna Goyen said the following. When Chazal HaKdoshim instituted various decrees, don't do the following, don't eat this, don't go there, don't do this, etc., etc., they didn't always give all of the reasons. They might well have given one of the reasons, or some of the reasons, but not necessarily all of them. If that's the case, well, obviously, you cannot possibly say, well, sorry, the reason doesn't apply anymore, so the decree also doesn't apply anymore. That particular reason doesn't apply. But it may well be that other reasons still do apply. And in as much as we don't know what the other reasons are, we're not privy to all of the reasons, because for whatever reason, Chazal decided only to explain some of the logic behind the Yisurim, but certainly not all of them. So if they institute it, it remains in place forever. And that's why the Vilna Goyen says, besides for the fact that the reality is that in Eretz Yisrael there still are snakes, but even besides for that, even in Chutz La'aretz, where perhaps really there are less snakes or none at all, but you cannot be mevatel the issa just because the logic seems no longer to be relevant, because even if you're right, but you're wrong, because there may well be other reasons, we don't know what they are, and therefore we cannot base any logic on them because we don't know what they are.
No one knows themselves. They give a reason, and future generations will say, if this reason doesn't apply anymore, they will say it doesn't apply anymore. If Chazal wanted us to think about other reasons, then that means any reason.
Oh!
And then
right, so you're leading us into the very next point. So this is a fascinating Vilna Goyen itself. There is a famous Mishnah. We all know the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Shabbos, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, says four words. Loi yikra la'or haner. Do not read by the light of a candle on Shabbos. Why? It doesn't say. Don't read by the light of the candle on Shabbos. No reason is given whatsoever. You turn to the Gemara, a couple of daf later, and it says in the Braisa, do you know why you shouldn't read by the light of the candle? Because we're concerned that you might come to adjust the candle on Shabbos. Maybe it'll be flickering and you won't be able to read properly and you'll come to adjust it. And if you adjust the candle on Shabbos, you may well end up having transgressed an Issur D'Oraita. So we all know how the Gemara continues. Hez, the Heilige Tana Rabbi Shmuel. Ah. I think that I could read by the light of the candle, and don't worry, nothing will happen to me. I will not adjust the candle. And what happens? He read by the light of the nail, and there are various gyrosoi. Some have a text that he was on the verge of tilting the candle, and some in fact have a text that he did. But in fact he did. upon which, he uttered the famous words, and he said, Kamo gedoimin divrei chachamim. How great were the words of Chazal, shehayu oimrim, that they said, lo yikra lo'or hanir. How great are the words of Chazal when they said, don't read by the light of the candle. Now, listen to this goinus of the Vilna Goin. How would you learn pshat in that Gemara? If you did ask me, I would say that what Rabbi Shmuel was saying was, wow, Chazal knew what they were talking about. When they said, don't read by the light of the candle, because what? Because you might adjust it. Clearly they were right. There really does exist a very real concern. You might adjust the nail, because it in fact either almost happened or did happen with me. So is the Vilna Gaon, but not the pshat. You know what pshat is? Pshat is as follows. If we look in the Torah HaKadosha, invariably, in most places, the Torah does not give reasons for Isurim, for Averis. Mitzvahs perhaps, yes, but not for Averis. Don't do the following. Don't eat Chazir. Why not? Because it's an answer. Even don't steal, don't kill, no reason is given. There are two exceptions where the Torah did give the reason. In our parasha, what are those two Isurim? It says that a melech should not purchase too many horses. Does the Torah stop there? No. The Torah carries on and it gives the reason. Do you know why? Because if the king buys too many horses, he'll be tempted to end up going to Mitzrayim. Another possible. A king should not marry too many wives. The Torah does not stop there. The Torah continues. Because if he marries too many wives, they may turn his heart away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's two averas, and the reasons are stated. We know what happens. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, do you know why the Torah normally does not give reasons? Because there are two averas where the reason is stated. And what happened to Shlomo HaMelech? Shlomo HaMelech said, oh, we can rationalize over here. If you tell me that you cannot get too many horses because I may end up in Mitzrayim, don't worry, it won't happen to me. He bought many horses, and what happened?
He ended up in Mitzrayim.
It says you cannot marry too many wives because they might turn your heart away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't apply to me. He married 1,000 wives, and the Pasuk says they turned his heart away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara says, if ever you want to know why the Torah doesn't state the logic behind the averas, this is the reason. Because on two occasions the Torah did state the logic, and look what disastrous consequences that brought about. So sometimes you see that you're far better off not knowing the reason. Ignorance might well be bliss. It's perhaps better not to know the reasons, because if you know too much, you start rationalizing and justifying, as is what happened with Shlomo HaMelech. Says the Vilna Gaon, total gaonus. Again, what did the Mishnah say? Loi yikra la'or hamer. Do not read by the light of the candle. What was the reason stated in the Mishnah? There was no reason stated. No reason was given. Comes along the later Brisa. The Brisa, I'll tell you the logic. Do you know why you shouldn't read by the light of the candle? Because you may tilt it, you may adjust the candle. What does Rabbi Shmuel say? Oh, that's the reason. Because you might come to adjust it. Oh, that doesn't apply to me. And he ended up adjusting the candle. So what does he explain? Kamo gedoimim divrei chachamim, how wise Chazal were when they gave that issa without stating the reason. We understood that what was the pshat in the Gemara. How wise Chazal were, they knew what they were talking about. Obviously people will adjust the candle, that's not what he means. Kamo gedolim divrei chachamim, and it's very mizuyik in the words of the Gemara. What does the Gemara say? Kamo gedolim divrei chachamim when they said lo yikra la'or haneir. Do you know what was so great about Chazal? Not what they said, what they didn't say. They said lo yikra la'or haneir. Period. Full stop. They didn't give any reason. Rabbi Shmuel says, I now realize how great they were to do that. Because if the Mishnah would have stated lo yikra la'or haneir, and they never would have been given any reason behind it, I never would have ended up in a mess. Why? Because I wouldn't possibly have justified or rationalized that perhaps I'm allowed to do this. What do you mean? Well, you're above the letter of the law? But once the reason was given and it says the chashash is you may adjust it, he says, say this, I won't adjust it. So I would have been far better off had the reason not been given. There's the Vilna Gaon. That is the case in several Issuri Chazal. Even when they did give the reasons, they didn't necessarily give all of them. Because you're running too big a risk. And people start justifying, oh, there's reason number one, two, and three. Well, this does apply, this doesn't apply. Says the Vilna Gaon, Gilui Mashkin, what was the reason stated? Because of snakes? That may be one of the reasons, but certainly not all of the reasons, and there were other reasons as well. So Rabbi Yosef, I think you're still correct in asking, well, wouldn't they just then indeed have been better off not giving any reasons at all? According to the Vilna Gaon, Chazal should have said, don't drink water left overnight. Why? That's it, discussion closed. No reason stated, and then there wouldn't be room for this discussion at all. That's a fair point. But all the Vilna Gaon is saying is, even when they did give a reason, don't for a moment think that that's the end of the list. There might well be other reasons, and therefore you cannot start making cheshbonos. It does apply. When does it apply? You don't know the logic behind the Issurim of Chazal. Later on in the parasha, in Perek Yitzes, Pasuk Hay, where we read the psukim concerning the Ori Miklot, the cities of refuge, as we know, those are with us, Lev Makas, second Perek, somebody who kills the Shegig must run to the Ori Miklot, and that way he is safe, until the Kohen Gadol dies when he can leave. So there is one very key word that we're going to focus on for a moment or two. If you look in Pasuk Hey, it says, the person will enter the forest, and he will cut wood, and he will accidentally kill somebody. So it says, "Hu yonus el achat ha'orim ha'el." He should flee to one of these six cities, or eventually 42. And then it says one word, "Vochoy," and he will live there. And he will live there. Based on this singular word, "Vochoy," the Gemara in Makkos learns a number of halachas. The Gemara says that if a Talmid ends up being exiled, then you have to exile his Rebbe together with him. Poor Rebbe, what did he do wrong? The Talmid was the one who killed by accident. He should go to Ori Miklot. Says the Gemara, Talmid Shagolo, Megalin Raboi Imoi. Why? What's the source? Says the Gemara, you know what the source is? One word, because it says Vachoy. He has to live. Midi de tahave lechiyusa. You've got to give him life. What does that mean? You have to give him life. I understand. So send him to Ori Miklot, give him food and water and shelter. That's called life. What does the Rambam say? The famous Rambam. Do you know why the Rebbe has to go with him? Because chaye bale chokhma umavaksheha. The life of those who want to increase their chokhma. What type of chokhma? Obviously, the chokhma of Torah. Below Talmud, without somebody to teach it to them, is Kamisa Chashuvim. It's as good as that. As good as that. So if the Torah tells us that when you send him to Ori Miklot, it's not good enough so that he should get there, you've got to provide him with life, part of life is to have your Rebbe with you. Such that if the Talmud gets exiled, you have to exile the Rebbe together with him. Tremendous finish. We once explained When Korach rebelled against Moshe Rabbeinu, the ultimate Rebbe, the Rebbe of all of Klal Yisrael, he suffered a very, very bizarre punishment. What was his punishment? Was he killed as such? He wasn't killed, he was just swallowed up alive. Is there any other precedent for that? Yes. The Gemara tells us that Har Sinai was suspended over Klal Yisrael. You want to accept the Torah? Great. And if not, what's the wording of the Gemara? It doesn't say you will die. What does it say? Shom Tehei Kvurachem. You'll be buried there. It doesn't say you'll be killed. You'll be buried alive. We want to explain. There are two ways that your watch could cease to exist or cease to work. How do you make a watch non-functional? Two ways. One way is you take a very big sledgehammer, you use it appropriately, the watch is smashed to smithereens, and that's it can't tell the time. There's a much more delicate way of doing it. You simply take out the battery, produce the same results. The watch is now rendered useless. One of the ways is you have killed off the watch. The second way, you haven't killed it off. You've just cut off its life source. So he's buried alive. If somebody doesn't accept Torah, he doesn't get killed. Doesn't say it's not one of the mitzvahs of the Torah that you must accept Torah. But you have to realize that kihein chayenu v'oirech yomim, that is our life source. And if you therefore don't accept Torah, you've cut off your life source. So you might physically be alive, but you'll be buried alive. What happens if you bury somebody alive? What does he do then? The answer is, not much. There's not much you could do in a grave which is closed. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu, this mountain will drop on you. Don't say you'll die. Shomtei Kuras, you might be walking around physically, but you're spiritually not alive. You might not be dead, you have no life source. So too, those who cut themselves off, not from the Torah, but those who represent Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader of Klal Yisrael, and what does Korach say? I can do without him. Ah, you know what you're in fact saying? You can do without life. So what happens to Korach? He's buried alive. Doesn't get killed, but an oinish. If you think you can manage without life, fine, so we'll close you up in a box, swallow you up, and you'll cut yourself off from life. The famous Moshel that Rabbi Akiva told those who said to him, why are you learning Torah in times of danger? And he said, imagine the fish are told by the fox, here, come with me out the water. What a silly piece of advice. What happens if you take a fish out of water? Are you killing him? You're not killing him. You're just detaching him from his life source. That's what happens if somebody detaches themselves either from Torah or from their Rebbe, who is their connection to Torah. As we say, Eitz Chaim Hi. The Torah is our source of life. Providing that, Eitz Chaim Hi L'machazikim Bo. L'machazikim Bo. You have to hold on to it. I remember we used to have a garden in Nachal Revivim, number 10, in the Liyot Dovid. And I remember once walking out on a very hot day, and looking, there was a tree there, we had grapes on the tree at the time. And I noticed a phenomenal thing, it was a boiling hot day. Boiling hot day, and I looked at these beautiful, lush grapes on the tree. And then on the floor I saw that a grape had fallen off, and it completely withered and shriveled. What's the difference between a grape on the floor and the grape 2 or 3 feet above it on the tree? The answer is, the grape on the floor is no longer attached to its life source. It can't cope, so in the blazing sun, what happens? It just shrivels and rots away. For the other grape, I'm attached to the life source. Something can happen to me. It could be hot, it could be cold, it could be rain, it could be dry. Eitz Chaim Hi L'machazikim Bo. The Medrash says that the Gedolei Yisrael are like the wings of a bird. Klal Yisrael are a bird, their wings are the Gedolei. Imagine you cut off the wings of a bird, what happens? It can't fly. Is it a punishment? Not a punishment, it's just a reality. You don't have the vehicle to fly anymore. So too, Klal Yisrael have their wings. What are their wings? The Gedolei Yisrael. You want to detach yourself from your wings? The Sadist, you'll stay stationary, motionless, you won't do very much. Al-Koponim, that is what Chazal are teaching us in this week's parasha. The Talmud who has to be exiled to Golos, but he's got to go with his Rebbe. Because without his Rebbe, where is his Chayus? Where is his Chiyus? He has detached himself from his life source. The interesting thing is that the other way around is also true. Because how does the Gemara continue? And if the Rav is exiled, does the yeshiva go with him? If the Talmud is exiled, the Rebbe gets dragged along with him. And if the Rebbe is exiled, the yeshiva go with him. I'll tell you a funny thing. When I was in the Meir Yeshiva, I was once sitting in the base of Medrash, my Rebbe, the Rafal Shmulevitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and the Rosh Hashiva, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was giving a shmooze, and he was bemoaning the fact that people are learning too slowly. He said, you're learning too slowly, you've got to move, you've got to cover ground. And he said, with a smile on his face, he said, you know, Rav Shach once said, that you know whose fault it is? It's the Magid Shir's fault. If they would only push their Talmid, and they're giving Shir too slowly, and they're staying on the same daf for weeks and weeks and weeks, it's the Magid Shir's fault. And he said, with a smile on his face, Rav Shach said, if I would have Koyach, I'd take all the Magid Shirim and throw them in jail. Their fault. The false Shmulevitz were sitting there, so he whispered to the guy next to him, it won't help. Because Chazal say that what happens when the Rebbe goes to Golos, the yeshiva has to go with him anyway. So if you throw the Magid Shir in prison, the yeshiva has to go with him. It doesn't solve the problem at all. But I'll call upon him, that's what the Gemara says. If the Talmud gets exiled, then the Rebbe has to go with him. So we just explained, because that's his chiyus. So how does it work the other way around? But if the Rebbe gets exiled, the Talmidim have to go with him. So what are we going to say, obviously? What do we see from over here? It's a double-edged sword. There's two sides to this coin. The chiyus of the Talmud comes from his Rebbe. But the chiyus of the Rebbe comes from his Talmidim. That's what you see, a phenomenal thing. Chazal tell us, the Amora who said that I learnt a lot from my Rebbeim and a lot from my friends, but me Talmidai! I learned everything from my Talmidim. The Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, the Ponim Yofes, the Bala Flor, says the following. He says the most phenomenal Chiddush. Imagine somebody at the age of 2 would be locked up in an ivory tower and he has at his fingertips every Sofer he wants. Shas, Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah, and he stays there for 120 years. How will he emerge? Says the Ponim Yofes, you will not emerge at Talmud Chacham. Why not? The way that Torah is transmitted from Dor to Dor is from Rebbe to Talmud. There is no other way. The notion of a self-made millionaire entrepreneur can exist maybe in money terms, but not in spiritual terms. You can't become an entrepreneur Talmud Chacham. Because where are you getting your Torah from? Self-made! Mr. Shinazim, self-made. Moshe Kibel Torah, Misinai, Umasara, Yeshua. Yeshua, there's a transmission of Torah. There is no other way, there's no shortcut, and it cannot be bypassed. The only way Torah can be transmitted is from Rebbe to Talmud. Says the Ponim Yofes, listen to this Chiddush. The Rebbe is zoicha to a shefa of chokhmah. Why is he zoicha to the shefa of chokhmah? In order to transmit to the Talmidim. You are the conduit. You are the conduit. You are the provider of Torah to your Talmidim. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you'll be zoicha to a shefa of chokhmah. That's what it means. Umi Talmidai yoisami kulam. It doesn't mean that my Talmidim taught me Torah. It means in the zechus of my Talmidim, I was zoicha to Torah. Imagine the pipe. Imagine the pipe. You see the water running through the pipe, and the pipe says, wow, look what I have, all this water running through me. What do you mean? You're just a deliverer of the water to the guy holding his cup at the other end. That's why you have the water in you, otherwise you have no purpose, essentially. The Rebbe is a sinner, besides to being a Kli, to be Mekabel Torah in his own right, but as his function, as his status as a Rebbe, Mitalmidai Yosef Mikulam. That's the way he learns. Just like we know, for example, the great multi-millionaire. If he has the right attitudes, his attitude should be, do you know what I am? I'm a bank. It's not my money. Kadosh Baruch Hu has deposited money with me in order to dispense, to give to poor people, to give to Moshe Sateer, etc., etc. So why has he got the money in the first place? To be the provider. If there wouldn't be the necessity to provide, then he wouldn't have the money in the first place. So really, he's the receiver, he's not the giver. Rabbi Lazer Gordon, the famous Telzer Rosh Hashiva, had an arrangement with his father-in-law that his father-in-law supported him in learning. And there was an arrangement, and the arrangement was up. So the father-in-law calls his young son-in-law, Rabbi Lazer Gordon, he says, that's it, we had an agreement, the agreement was up, I can no longer support you in learning. And he appealed to him, and he appealed to him, he says, please, 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 all right, fine, another year. He supported him in learning another year. After a year, he said, that's it. No longer. We have an agreement, we have an arrangement, we have an extension, that's it. I'm no longer supporting you. The next day the father-in-law passed away. And the famous line that Rabbi Lazer Gordon said, the real question is, who's supporting who? Who's supporting you? Why did you have the money? You had the money to support Torah. If you're not supporting the Torah, well, there's no reason for you to exist then. So this is a double-edged sword. The chiyus of the Talmud comes from his Rebbe. The chiyus of the Rebbe comes from his Talmud. And therefore one cannot go to Golos without the other, because the Torah specifically states, Vachor, you have to live there. So in the same way as you've got to provide him with Gashmias life, Kal Vachoyna, you have to provide him with Ruchnias life. And as the Rambam says, somebody who's looking for Chofer without his Rebbe is as good as dead. The Rebbe has to bring his Talmud, the Talmud has to bring his Rebbe. Finally, perhaps not specifically related to the parasha, but I think it would be incorrect not to make mention, of course, that we are 5 days into Elul, we're already into the 6th day, Vav Elul. I heard recently a Rav giving a drasha, and he said that I once gave a fire and brimstone drosha prior to Yom Kippur Ne'ilah. And he says, one of the congregants approached me at the end and he said, thank you very much for the drosha, but what a shame you only told it to us now before Yom Kippur Ne'ilah. Why didn't you tell it to us at the beginning of Elul? So I'm going to tell it to you at the beginning of Elul. The Chofetz Chaim gave the following very powerful moshel. We say in davening in Yom Kippur Ne'ilah, Ata Noisein Yad Lapoishim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives his hand to sinners. The Chofetz Chaim said the following. The marshal is, somebody makes his way to a train station. He has to make a very, very important trip from place A to B. He looks at the sign and it says the train is departing in 2 hours. Ah, 2 hours? I have plenty of time. And his friend says to him, well, don't you think you ought to purchase a ticket? He says, no, I have 2 hours. So he walks around, takes in all the sights and sounds, goes shopping, does this, that, the other. There's only an hour to go. His friend says to him, what a shame, all the first class tickets have gone. Alright, second class is fine for me, so go and buy a ticket. I have an hour left. Half an hour to go, all the second class tickets are gone. Don't you think now you should buy it? I have plenty of time. And this goes on, and so suddenly he hears a shriek of the whistle, and the train starts chugging out the station, slowly, slowly, and he realizes, Ligabal, I need to take this train, I have a very, very urgent meeting in the big city. And he starts running after the train, hey, wait, he says, I need to get on the train, and the guard on the train sees this fellow, and he says, here, and he stretches out his hand, and he grabs all, and he drags him into the train. You just about made it. He says, it's a bit late in the day. There's no seats in first class or second class, and to be quite honest, in fact, there's no seats at all. So where are you going to be seated? you're going to have to be tucked away in the back carriage with the suitcases. It's dark, it's moist, it's moldy and damp and dirty and smelly, but that's going to be your place. Said the Chofetz Chaim, if somebody wakes up at the last moment, Yom Kippur Ne'ilah, day 40 of the 40-day journey of Yemei Rotzeh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will stretch out his hand, HaNosein Yad LaPoishim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will drag him in. But what type of place will he have? The Mokoim Shabali Tshuva Oindim, a very special place that a Baal Tshuva has. What type of place will you have? Do you know what place you'll have? In the back carriage with the dirty suitcases. That's where you'll be. If only you get going early on in Elul, then you'll get your first class ticket. Then you'll be in a good place. You know, every year we hear a drasha, you know, last year we tried so hard and we were makabel this, that and the other and it all fizzled out. What went wrong? Do you know what went wrong? Imagine you go home now for supper and you want to heat up some food. There's two ways you can heat them up. Oven, track one. Microwave, track two. What's the difference? Two differences. Firstly, the oven takes much longer. The oven will take a good 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, depending on what you're heating up. Put it in the microwave, a minute, you're done. But you know what the other difference is? What happens a minute later? The food that came out of the oven is hot and remains hot. The food that comes out of the microwave cools down in seconds. Everybody needs to choose. Which tshuva track am I taking? The microwave track or the oven track? If I'm going to wake up at Yom Kippur Ne'ilah, that's it, quick microwave job, a HaKadosh Baruch Hu drags me in kicking and wailing and I get up into the suitcase carriage, and then I'm left scratching my head 2 days later thinking, why are all the things that are on Makabala, why have they fizzled out? Because you hardly gave them time to fizzle in. That's why they've cooled down so quickly. If you want to rely on that track, you're running a huge risk. A Kodesh Baruch Hu will take you in. A Nathan Yad. A Kodesh Baruch Hu will drag you in. The guard slept in this fellow into the train. But you're going to be left wondering what might have been. Why didn't this last longer? I tried so hard. The answer is that you didn't give it a chance to run, because you put it in the microwave for about 30 seconds till it was hot, and but a minute later it was all over. They came to the Navi. They came to the Navi Nehemiah crying on Rosh Hashanah, as the Pasuk describes. The Navi says, don't cry. Don't cry. Do you know why you shouldn't cry? There's a sefer that I found, Oyer HaMeir, one of the early Hasidic rebbes, and he writes there, do you know what the Navi was really telling them? Don't cry in Rosh Hashanah, it's too late. Where were you all of Elul? If you would have cried during Elul, if you would have undertaken then to be chayza b'tshuva, that would have been a sustainable tshuva process. Not a quick microwave job, quick in, quick out. Now you cry in Rosh Hashanah? Where were you until now? When we read about Gedolei Olam, I read only recently, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said that he heard from the Gaivid of Yerushalayim, Rav Benges, that he remembers as a young man that when the Chazan on Shabbos Mavarach and Elul said the word Elul, many people in the Beis Medrash fainted on the spot, passed out. It's not a story from the Gemara or from the Medrash, a story 100 years ago. People passed out, finished, collapsed. That's to bring water to revive him, he said. The Chofetz Chaim I read recently in the Sefer Toilvus Chofetz Chaim, when he heard the Chazan say Rosh Chodesh Elul, he burst into tears. Why did they burst into tears? Why did these people faint? Because they realized that Rosh Hashanah is a month away? No, because they realized it's now Elul and there's work to do. There's avodah too during Elul. We don't want to wait till the last moment. We don't want to wait till HaKadosh Baruch Hu drags us in and we chayza b'tshuva in a 5 minute tshuva process and I'm a kabbal this, I'm a kabbal that, and we wonder the next day what all went wrong. And then next year, Tokshi and Ayin Tes, we're going to have to hear another schmooze about what went wrong, Tovshin Ayin Ches. We don't want to have to do that. We don't want to have to do that. Rather, we want to opt for the oven track of tshuva, and not for the microwave track of tshuva. So that when this Rav gave his drasha and said this moshe of the Chofetz Chaim, I think we understand why the congregant came to him and said, well, why are you telling us this at Ne'ilah? Shouldn't you have told us this at the beginning of Elul? Shouldn't you have told us this at the beginning of Elul? So we're sharing this together at the beginning of Elul. 5 days gone, 35 to go. We still have most of Elul left. Now's the time. Now's the time. If you give your tshuva process time to run, time to heat up in the oven, such that when we come to Rosh Hashanah and Atzeres Yemei Tshuva and Yom Kippur, it's not a microwave job, a quick fix-it job, but rather we've heated it up properly, we've heated ourselves up properly, that Amit Hashem, our Kabbalist and our tshuva process will be sustained. It might well be that this time next year there'll be other things to be chosen for tshuva, but hopefully we'll be able to look back at this Yom Neiroim, not Chas V'Shalom, it was all a waste of time and it all fizzled out and it evaporated and it disappeared as soon as it arrived. Chas V'Shalom, we were mekabel in ourselves kabbalos from the beginning of Elul, we put them into place and therefore they were sustainable and they were sustained. Yemit Hashem, we should be zeicher to make our best possible use of our Elul, so we should come well equipped to the Yom Neiroim, and thus to be zeicher to Ketuvah Chasimut.